Hello, welcome to IN, a series of live online conversations with practitioners in the visual arts. IN is broadcasted by New Local Space, a microgallery and contemporary art initiative in Kingston, Jamaica, and a subsidiary of audio production house Creative Sounds. NLS's 2015 programming is made possible with support from Creative Sounds, 360 Degrees, and True Self Center of Being. This evening, we're happy to speak with artists Camille Cheddar, Onika Russell, Philip Thomas, and Prudence Lavelle about their current exhibition at NLS, Insides. I'm going to give you a little bit of an introduction to the exhibition before we start talking. Insides presents contemporary drawing as a significant part of these four artists' practices, turning the method of drawing inside out and expanding it beyond its more conventionally recognized use as a preliminary means of generating ideas behind the work. This exhibition highlights the forceful entity that drawing can be in contemporary art practice. In Insides, the artists' differing statements, approaches, and media speak to the social significance and diversity of what a drawing can be. Significantly, too, all four artists in the exhibition are lecturers teaching at the Edna Manley College. And I'd just like to welcome all four of you, Prudence, Philip, Onika, and Camille. Welcome to IN.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
Before we get started, I want to remind the audience that they can send in questions on Twitter. Our handle on Twitter is NLS Kingston, or by messaging us on our Facebook page, private messaging us on our Facebook page. The first question I'd like to ask you all is about the process behind the exhibition. A lot of people may not realize this, but the show was a collaborative project between the four of you. Could you give the audience a basic idea of how you all came to the consensus that you should pursue this show and what the process was like for you as you prepared for it? I'd love to hear from each of you on this. Onika, could you maybe kick that off?
Okay. Well, I myself recently joined the Edna Manley College staff, and I think Camille joined maybe the year before or the semester before.
Yeah.
And, Philip has been there maybe four or five years before. And Prudence had been, is it in and out?
Yes.
Of the department. So we all were at the college at that point in time. Last September, we began talking about things that were happening in the contemporary art scene,
right,
things that were happening in the department, how we were teaching, how we were critiquing, how we were speaking to students about our work, the work that's out there, and what they should be doing, what they should be looking at. And so it led us back to thinking about developmental work. So that linked with drawing as some kind of preparatory basis for the work that we all make. You know, one of the things we found interesting was that, unlike maybe 10 years ago when myself and Philip were in art school, where it was kind of assumed that drawing was the basis of what you did and it was an integral part of the practice, a lot of us were making now installation, objects, art produced which the drawing seemed kind of buried and hidden in there under the surface. And so we started talking about, you know, what is the role of this developmental work, and perhaps doing a show together could somehow be a kind of catalyst for students to understand what it is and what goes into preparing, making art. And so at the same time, we had just opened our a new kind of small painting office, which gave us the chance to sit and talk, which was like the first time this was happening for quite a while. So, you know, we had all four of us, and the debate was going on, and the conversation was going. And so it started to occur to us that maybe a show could be a way of researching this idea. And at the same time, proposals were going out for NLS you know, for the year to do shows. And we thought, well, the space is a space that is manageable. It is a size that we could use it as an experimental basis. And so we all started talking about, you know, what we wanted to do. It involves several meetings, just sitting down maybe lunchtime or after classes, mm-hmm. talking about, you know, what is out there, what are we looking at, and what is drawing, what do we each do to prepare for our work. And so by consensus over time, it came up that we all wanted to think about how we use drawing or refer to drawing or understand drawing in the process of what we make today. So it's really just several meetings. And then once we decided what we wanted to do is sending in a proposal, meeting with Deborah of NLS, and just continuing the conversation, speaking with each other. And then even in the process of making the work, like, we were all, I think, support for each other, bouncing ideas off mm-hmm. of each other. Deborah came in and gave her two cents on how we how we planned the space, as she rightly should, as proprietor of NLS. Right. So I don't know, do you want to add anything else?
Sure. I think also what was interesting for me is that in the years before, we sort of rarely saw lecturers teaching and working simultaneously on a constant basis. And so one of the things, you know, the fact that we were all lecturers at Edna Manley College, and we were all seeing some of the same problems that the students were having. And so we started to talk about the idea of drawing and how they were seeing it as a kind of preparatory thing as opposed to a subject in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of the catalyst to look at drawing specifically as a kind of subject.
Camille, you want to weigh in?
And one of the things that came up when we were discussing the idea of drawing was we were kind of, looking at or trying to remember exhibitions that had focused solely on drawing, and we couldn't really think of, I don't think we could have found an example of that. So we kind of, wanted to be the ones who put a drawing show on and think about these ideas of what drawing is. And like Onika said, it's kind of just, it's just a research of, to answer these questions about what it is or what it could be or where it's going. So that's kind of one of the reasons why it came about.
So have you, had you guys ever collaborated on a project, an exhibition before? And is this a model that you've seen often at Edna or even in Jamaica? Yeah, we're hearing some dogs in the background. But we're professional. would you say that have you all ever collaborated on a project before, like an exhibition or anything? And secondly, is this a model that you've seen before here and something that you see often?
I think for myself, I had worked with an artist out of New York, Sandra Stevens, in 2012, and I saw where she was a member of staff and she organized show with her, and it was this process of back and forth. So we would start with Skyping, like email, with sketches, and shared back and forth. And then also, when we got to the space, it was a process of her putting up work, me putting up work, and then altering it, and just this ever-evolving process of putting a show together. And I felt like I grew a lot as an artist from that process. And I thought, you know, I hadn't seen all of these people for years because I'd been abroad studying, and I thought it would be a really good chance to kind of understand what they were doing, because everybody had gone in a different direction and had different ideas, different places and things that they were engaging with, and I really thought that I wanted
to do that
and invite us to participate. And, you know, as I think Philip said, it's very rare that you have these lecturers who are presenting outside of Edna Manley College. We do have a staff show, which is, you know, that happens annually. But I think it's important to engage in the external art world outside of college. And this is something which you're not really thinking of as a show, you know, a major exhibition, the way that maybe the National Gallery exhibitions are. So, yeah, I thought it was a good chance.
Yeah, there's definitely a process. There definitely was an emphasis on, and I think it was just part of the whole collaboration is process. I think that comes with the territory when you're doing collaboration. And also another thing that comes with the territory is negotiation. Like, and I think that's probably, for me, that's one of the more interesting aspects, considering that this is usually a hot topic in Jamaica, and how people normally kind of relate with each other, especially in some of the creative industries. People have a hard time collaborating. People have a hard time negotiating for various reasons. And I wonder if Prudence, you could weigh in on what that whole negotiation was. There, were you aware of a negotiation that was during this process in terms of even like the layout, the exhibition design, and how you all were going to focus your energies in terms of preparing? Did you find that there was a negotiation, and how did you respond to it?
Well, I was hardly aware of it because Anika was very skillful in moving us along the path without undue pressure. But we all observed a timeline that was quite a strict timeline from NLS itself. Mm-hmm. So there was negotiation, I think, collaboration. But in this case, I think it was a very smooth journey. I think it's very interesting what you say, people have trouble. Artists often work a lot in isolation, and then when they are brought together for a project, they haven't perhaps got the well-oiled skills in terms of aligning themselves smoothly and suavely with what needs to be done. And but I think in this instance we didn't see a lot of those potential difficulties which do crop up. As I say, partly because of the timeline was very steady, and or partly because Anika was collaborating or coordinating, really, our ideas as we went along.
I think maybe we should have started off with this, but it would be great if you could each give us a little bit of background. I know I mentioned that you're all lecturers at Edna Manley, but just a little bit, touch on a few of your most recent projects before Insides, and also where you studied before before you lectured at Edna. Maybe we can start with Philip.
Yeah, sure.
Then Camille, Onika, and Prudence.
All right. Well, I'm also a past student of the Edna Manley College, and then after I graduated from the college, I went off to New York to do a master's. And then I came back and decided to join the Edna Manley College faculty. And so from there, you know, you start to see what the playing field is like, see what people are concerned with at the college, see how people are dealing with their work. And so that sort of give you an idea as to how we would go about producing a certain kind of framework for teaching painting, or teaching some of the things that people were concerned about. And so for me personally, this particular project was a little challenging in that a lot of the work I do sort of carry a certain traditional idea of how to prepare for a kind of pre-drawing before the actual work develops into an actual painting, right? So to think about drawing as a subject, I had to sort of go through all of my notes on you know, how I went about preparing for a quote-unquote work of art. Now, what's interesting to me is that how I actually go about producing the image is totally a sort of looking at imagery through the internet, through books, and a sort of composite of digital work. And so it's almost sort of reverse engineered. If you think about how people think about technology and how people think about how people go about making contemporary art as opposed to traditional works. And so the work was sort of seen from a technological point of view into a traditional point of view. So it's almost sort of reverse engineered. So I was very interested in how to come about those ideas and see them in a project like this.
Mm-hmm. And Camille, could you tell us a little bit about your background prior to being a lecturer at Edna Manley?
Sure. I also studied painting at Edna Manley College. Mm-hmm. And then I went off and I did my master's in Massachusetts in painting, and I taught drawing in Massachusetts for a year, and then came back and taught at Edna Manley and since 2013, and I'm teaching in the painting department. The previous works that I've done the works that we're seeing at the National Gallery, I guess, would be an easier way to go about things is the built-in obsolescence piece that was in the New Roots exhibition, and also the wholesale degradables that was in the Jamaica Biennale that just closed. And then these works are kind of, all the works are kind of in the same line of thinking about disposability. Mm-hmm. And I guess this show kind of challenged me in a way to think about what drawing is and how I can apply the works that I'm always thinking about this idea, how drawing can be applied here. And my initial response was just to say that, you know, whatever comes before the final piece is considered a drawing, even if it doesn't involve traditional drawing material like, you know, your charcoal or your graphite and your pencil and your paper. So I was considering working more with photography and the bags, but I actually ended up literally drawing, like using a marker to draw on the bags, the portraits. And that was a part of the thinking about what drawing has evolved to become today, that it's something that finds itself not necessarily in a background, but it's embedded now in installation, or it's found itself in video, and so it's present, but it's masked in a way, or it's not the main feature, it's not the focal point, but it's become embedded in a language, in a bigger language or a bigger setup.
Yeah, I want to come back to talk, asking a few more questions about that, Camille, asking all of you about that. But before we get there, I also want Prudence and Onika to just give the audience a little bit, a brief background of their careers and their art practice thus far, just leading up to this point. Mm-hmm. Prudence?
Well, I'd have to condense it and make it very brief. I'm trained in England at what is now Kingston University, but it was Kingston College of Art in those days. And then I did postgraduate, but mostly focusing on education in Manchester. But I soon left England and came to live in Kingston, Jamaica. And then I started work. And in the intervening years, my work's taken a lot of twists and turns. For example, I spent 10 years on watercolor, 10 years on mixed media collage, I ended up in the Netherlands for about 7 years, and that was a very interesting time for me to work amongst and talk with the Dutch artists there, who were in a very good situation in that they were supported by their government. And it was a very fruitful time. After that, I returned, and since then I've been off and on at the college, at the Edna Manley College. But during that time, a lot of things have changed. And as Camille says, drawing has become embedded in other parts of current and contemporary practice. It's more masked. It's not the bedrock, if you like, or the taproot that it used to be in training. And I think that's inevitable as a new media has come aboard and become prominent and become a very relevant way of dealing with contemporary realities. And drawing has not necessarily taken a back seat, but I think has become inside, if you like, appropriately inside other ways of practicing. It's in there, but it's, as Camille says, masked. So it's been interesting for me to ask myself, and also as a lecturer, how relevant are these traditional skills? Can they be jettisoned? Can they be thrown overboard? How much time should we, and effort should we give to promoting them? Or do we just let people work at those skills if they need them? Mm-hmm. So it's still something, I think, which we're all asking ourselves, perhaps, and even the administration, I think, is asking themselves, or perhaps not entirely sure how important drawing is as a part of the whole menu of courses that exist at the college.
Okay. Onika?
What everybody has said kind of puts me in mind of something that I forgot to mention, which was the essay which we had prepared. And I kind of see the ideas coming forth in what each person is saying, you know, approaches to drawing, drawing as document, drawing as investigation and inquiry, as experiment, etc. But to talk about my background, I also studied painting at the Edna Manley College. And directly after, I left and did a one-year MA course in UK. And then I returned to Jamaica, and I began teaching at Edna Manley College for a year. And then after that, I began preparing to go on a residency to Singapore, which I had applied for. And at the same time, I was looking to kind of open up my horizons, and I wanted to see more things. I wanted to understand what art was outside of this context. At the time, we didn't have a lot of information about what even Caribbean art looked like. And so I went to Japan to do a period of research, and then followed up by doing postgrad studies in film, video, and media art, which kind of allowed me the time to think further about some of the things that came up even when I was at Edna Manley College, where I was interested in digital drawing, and I wanted to find ways to bridge this interest in digital media with the traditional things I was doing, like painting on these large canvases. And so over time, I became more interested in art, which was more like experiential, involved things like sound and movement and all of this. And so being in Japan gave me an opportunity to engage with things like animation and video and film. And so that was really like the basis of my training. After that, I began exhibiting videos regularly. I think most people who have seen my work will think about video, particularly video, which is involving some kind of very loose, limited type of animation. Recently, for the biennial, I have begun making objects exhibited alongside drawings as I think about drawing/paintings, as I think about how an image can be understood in different ways. And particularly for insides at NLS, I chose to compile a lot of the work I had done, you know, for the last 5 years into a artist book and exhibited alongside with kind of the last animated experimental video that I'm planning to make for a while yet.
To go back to what Camille was saying about Camille brought up some of the work that she had made in for the biennial, and it made me think about I know that I am familiar with all of your works, but I feel in this exhibition one of the highlights for me of this exhibition is that I see a couple interweaving themes between each of your works. And these are themes that maybe I didn't notice before. I see, namely, violence against the black body coming up in Philip's work and in Camille's work. And between Onika's work and Prudence's work, what I see is a portrayal of this gap between what is projected by the individual, either of one's identity or one's image, and then what is actually received from the other end or from another individual. With Prudence, it's quite literal in that your work in the exhibition is a portrayal of a Skype conversation and the disruption in that connectivity and just and the barriers to this connectivity that, on the other hand, is actually a lot easier to initiate these days from a longer distance, you know, with Skype. Onika, your work, I see that whole the gap translated in your work, or I see coming up in your work between what between these masked individuals. So if there's somebody who is absolutely present in the images in these self-portraits, but then there's also simultaneously a mask that prevents a certain amount of access, and I wonder if you all thought about these overlaps and this interweaving, if that maybe brought you together, or if maybe that was something that came out even more in the works that you made for the exhibition. How do you feel about it? Do you agree that there are these overlaps, or is this something that you didn't notice before?
Yeah, I think I saw overlaps. I knew that, for example, Camille was very involved with portraiture in some sense, in the kind of in the actuality of what she was doing, even though it spoke to wider issues. Prudence, to be honest, I was not that familiar with her work before, but in terms of the ideology and the conversations we had had, I knew that there was a concern that was shared. Philip, I knew, was always dealing with the figure, and I think completely opposite to myself, a lot of his figures missing the faces and that identity, and it's like a silhouette and a shape. I think that sometimes, unlike my work, where I think someone is always looking at you and kind of holding you to some accountability, with Philip's, it's kind of a shadow of something that's there. So I felt like there was a lot of similarity. We were all interested in things to do with the figurative, or we were choosing the figurative as a way to represent these ideas that were disparate. And we all kind of came from a similar type of generation, either by teaching at the college or by studying at the college at a certain time. So there were certain ideas that were shared from the beginning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that each person has used the opportunity to kind of experiment new directions for their own work. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, I mean, when we mounted the show, it felt like we had worked alongside each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just came by just the conversation we had had.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else think that there are shared themes in the work? Philip, how do you feel about that? Did you notice that before the exhibition? Was this something that you were at all focused on, or something that you were at all aware of?
I'm guessing that it's something that, because of the way in which we have been embedded in the culture in one way or another, which has created a certain kind of similarity in some of the ideas that we're dealing with. But also, I think that our education as well has played a big part in how we're dealing with some of the images. But for the most part, I think that it wasn't a sort of intention,
mm-hmm.
in aligning the exhibition as a kind of a singular vision.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of occurred that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the autonomy of that, I think, is even more interesting. But as you mentioned, between myself and Camille, I think there are certain similarities in terms of issues of violence or issues of death, and these are current issues that are occurring in the country as it relates to, you know, our experiences. And so for sure, those things are things that we've agreed on, but not intentionally. It's
mm-hmm.
just the circumstances, really.
Just coming out of a similar time and context.
Yeah.
Camille, would you agree? And could you also, I'd love it if you could speak specifically about the piece that's in the exhibition and what's about.
Oh, okay. I think while we never directly collaborated with each other, like we weren't, you know, going to each other's studios and working with each other in that way, but I think the ideas that we're putting out have come from just absorbing what's going on around us. We're reacting to, you know, social ills or, you know, whatever it is, the current moment, we're just reacting to it. So, of course, there are going to be similarities. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, yes. We're hearing you.
Okay. So, you know, we all kind of dealt with portraiture in some way, and, you know, tackled issues of violence or identity in some way. The
title of your work in the show is Sketch for Exchange Value. Can you speak a bit about that?
Sure. I call it it's a sketch because I don't really consider it. I mean, it is a piece in itself, but I think in making it, I saw it as something that was me working out this idea of drawing and also working out something that I may do with the same piece eventually. I guess I'll talk about that in a bit, but exchange value, I was thinking about this idea of how a commodity could can be valued differently based on certain circumstances. That's my understanding of exchange value from the Marxist idea of you know, capitalist lingo. So the bags all have drawings of people who were killed by police. I use the same figures that I used in the wholesale degradables piece that was in the Biennale.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if there was a way to extend the idea a little bit further in terms of thinking about these people as thinking about their value as human beings, and starting to incorporate things from my environment. I had done a residency in Trinidad at Alice Yard, mm-hmm. and did a piece in that was sort of, well, it was referencing certain things from the market, and I used things like tarpaulin, and the way that the piece was hung was kind of somewhat mimicking how people hung cheap fruit and cheap things in the market. So this was kind of more of a response to how I've seen things displayed in the markets here, like across Jamaica. It's typical for you to see a bread crate with fruit or beans or whatever it might be in them. Actually, at the opening of the show, someone was saying that they look like bag juice bags or mm-hmm. something. So there is that kind of, you know, the language of this cheap commodity. And so I'm trying to suggest that this is how these people have been treated. And also the process of actually making the piece was good. It was a good thing in terms of just tying all these bags with air. They're empty. They only have air in them, and then they're slowly deflating. And there, that act of you know, giving these people the bags, giving them some air, and then they're slowly running out of this, you know, mm-hmm. air, is an interesting aspect of the work that I think is something that I need to consider for you know, future works. So sketch for exchange value is kind of like it's an exciting project for me to figure out what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
With same kind of theme and same objects and same imagery and same everything, but in a new space.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really liked about how it functioned as a drawing, and even conceptually about that piece, was the transparency of the bags. So if you viewed it from the front, you almost got mm-hmm. like a composite image of all the of all the other figures and images that were behind, or portraits that were behind the front portraits. So, right. I think that worked really eloquently in terms of, you know, how just from an emergent standpoint. So you have the one bag, but there's a sort of emergence of a whole other figure when they're all together and they come together.
Yeah. So they kind of lose their individual identity, and they become kind of this, like you said, a composite, just merged.
Yeah.
These merged figures, and also the stacking of the crates too. You kind of they're transparent, and then you lose visibility because you can't see what's going on in the bottom crate, mm-hmm. Except for the first row of bags. So there's a loss, there's a pressure, like the stacking kind of, funny enough, the stacking also keeps air in some of the bags at the bottom, so the bags at the top are running out of air. So, I mean, I don't know, I just find a lot, I've gained a lot from just doing the piece and seeing what it's doing on its own right now.
Yes. Prudence, could you speak, Elizabeth, about... Well, did you have a question for Camille?
I was just going to say, as Camille was talking, that the bags deflating and they're almost expiring and taking their last...
Right.
It's an interesting aspect of experiencing the work, actually, as it over the time of the exhibition.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could also could speak specifically about your work, also Prudence, your work in the exhibition. Give us a little bit more detail about, you know, what went into it, like what you were focused on, and some of the ideas behind it, and how that came through with the actual physical piece. And
yes, well, I was involved in Skype calls because of keeping in touch with my children, and in being involved in them and watching the way the screen behaved, I was struck by how it mimicked certain aspects of actually of the physical world, in the way that natural phenomena, wind and water and light on landscape, a flicker and change and blur and alter. And I suppose because I'd spent so long in an earlier part of my life sitting outside for 10 years and working in that way, that I saw those similarities. And the more I looked at the image, the more interested I became in how it was corrupted, and the sort of connectivity that was breaking down was a sort of assault on its clarity. And I wanted to see if I could do something with that, partly because I feel Skype is a really important phenomenon today. It's used by 100 million users regularly every month. It's only 10 years old, but it provides this visual reassurance for people who are separated in time and distance. And you can imagine how much more reassuring it is than years ago when you just had the audio, because you can see the actual person that you're perhaps close to, and you can see into their space. All that interested me. And then the last thing really was, how could I use a traditional medium to put it at the service of this very current phenomenon? And could that be done successfully? And I started with it last June. I had a lot of difficulties with it, partly because I'm used to using line to define form and space and light. And the line and the mark were really things that I was more articulate with. And this way of working meant that I had to focus really without the use of line more in the management of value. Mm-hmm. And that was quite hard and quite interesting, I think, for me. So it's a record of one conversation, but it's about connectivity in the modern world and what that might look like visually.
Yeah. Thank you. We don't have much time. If I can't believe how quick the time has flown by, but I do want to hear I just think it would be great if the I'm not going to let this opportunity pass without you also, Anika and Philip, telling the audience specifically about your works that are actually in the show. And then after that, I want to talk about just how you all, just so I can remind myself to ask you how it was working with such a small space, because NLS is uncharacteristically small. So anyway, but first, please.
I just wanted to also say about Prudence's work that it's just interesting that, you know, when we had the opening night, people were very, they liked it, but when they found out that it wasn't a digital print and it was actually traditional charcoal, mm-hmm. suddenly their appreciation of it kind of skyrocketed, you know.
For Prudence's work.
Right,
definitely.
Skyrocketed. And I just found it interesting how definitely. She was able to hit that. For my work in the show, okay, so for the last maybe four and a half years to 5 years that I spent abroad in Japan, I had to think about things differently. I had to think about myself as an artist and myself as a person differently. And I started to make these videos, and over the period of time, it was something like 7 to 8 videos. Some of them are never exhibited. But in that process, I think I got to a final video where I felt like it was everything I wanted to say at the beginning, but I didn't have the visual language or the scale or whatever it is to say. And this is a video that's in the exhibition where I made much more of an attempt to use just like drawing on paper, and I wanted to involve the actual materials that I was using. So even though the video has bits of drawings of myself from the front, from the back, my eyes, zooming in, zooming out, and portions of it in a landscape which is kind of ambiguous, but it looks like a kind of a forest landscape. The actual space is a park that was near my house in Japan. But I wanted the whole thing to come together as a piece which you couldn't tell. Like Prudence, there's this concern with what's new and what's old media. So some of the work is drawn with Sumi ink on paper, and some of it is drawn with an iPad and painted that way. So I found interesting the way that you could simulate paint in one aspect, and then in another aspect, something which looked like it might have been an illustrator drawing, the Adobe software program Illustrator, which is used for graphic design and so forth. Yeah. That was actually done with my hand. And so I liked how I was kind of merging everything, and it came into this very simple way of communicating the idea of being looked at and looking at something and not quite understanding what you're seeing or misinterpreting or having a different interpretation. And so in the video, my voice keeps repeating, when you look at me in different paces and different segments. Apart from that, there's the artist's book, which is there, which takes you from the beginning of that series towards the end, where you have some of the same recurring images from the video. And so I felt like it was, the work in the show was really like, for me, like, I don't know, catharsis or like completion of that period, where I can now feel like I can move on to different things. And so that's how I use the show.
When you look at me, I want to ask you some more about that. When you look at me, how did you, that phrase that repeats in the video piece, how did you, where does it originate from, and why did you choose that phrase?
Okay, I think I was thinking that video came, I think, almost maybe 8 months to a year after I made the second to last video. And so I'd had some time. I was already in Jamaica, and I had started working with Charles Campbell, former curator, chief curator at National Gallery, to develop a work for an upcoming show there. And so we started talking about some of the last drawings I had done when I was in Japan, and you know, we started talking about making this work that could kind of sum up everything. And so I thought about our phrase, like, what was I trying to say with every video? Because I was always presenting this figure to be looked at. And so I thought, well, it's really about when you look at me, I feel something. And I wanted to just play with that phrase.
There's definitely an open-endedness to it. I mean, is that intentional? Is that something that you've thought about in terms of, as you said, when you look at me, but then do you think the work provides an answer to that question, or do you think it's?
Yeah, I think there's enough there that you can project onto. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's enough there you can project onto, and I know Prudence has described my work as quite cryptic. Mm-hmm. But I think I do it a little bit intentionally, because I never wanted to make work that kind of tells you what you should know of everything about it. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to have some conversation with the thing, and it goes back to creating an experience, because I think you have to create half of the experience that the viewer brings, like the other part. And so I deliberately try not to make narratives which are kind of linear. I try to leave it open-ended, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Philip? Can you tell us some about the specific work in the exhibition?
Sure. Well, as a lecturer, one of the things that concerned me really was the idea of the college being multidisciplinary, but not necessarily interdisciplinary, right? And so some of the things that I've been asking myself about, you know, how are we going to be able to get the different departments to sort of interlock in use of materials, use of ideas, things like that. And so the ceramic pieces sort of came out of those questions, right? And so I went into the ceramic department and sort of had a conversation with students and explained that, you know, I wanted to use some traditional pots to then, you know, produce the paintings on and paintings from. And so that sort of opened the door for a dialogue with the ceramic department. And so that's how those works came into being. But the thing that really sparked that idea was really what was happening in the Middle East. I saw a video recently of the ISIS militants going from museum to museum, destroying works that are up to 5,000 years old. You know what I mean? And so those things are obviously irreplaceable things. And so I sort of had this weird reaction to it, and comparing it to what was happening during World War II, where, you know, some of the same things were lined up to happen and really didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the concerted effort that people made to save the works at that time during World War II, and the same thing that's not happening now, is to me really a travesty. And so it sort of fit into the whole narrative of, you know, violence and destruction and things like that. Well, the third piece, because I exhibited three pieces, mm-hmm. really, and the third piece, which is the two-dimensional work, was a sort of response to some of the things I've been thinking about, the randomness of the internet, right? When you type something in, you get, like, you know, several million images of different things that what you typed in could actually be. And so I decided to take all these images and create a sort of weird narrative, or a linear narrative out of it. And that's how that work occurred. And in a way incorporated even the surface, which is, I think, another thing that all of us have sort of interlocking ideas about, the superficiality of something.
Mm-hmm.
And so the glass frame on the image was sort of brought into the work. And so some of the imagery actually exists on the surface of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the images sort of worked into the framing itself. And so it's become a sort of art object, as opposed to an art image, which, it, you know, to me is an interesting thing.
And then there's that gold frame, like,
yeah, it's just it's well, the gold frame. I've exhibited works before where the frame is also framed in a, like, a glass box, and so it becomes this entire historical edifice in a way. And so the frame itself is sort of called into question in the work.
Mm-hmm. You said that you created a narrative from these images that came up. What kind of narrative do you feel you created? And then also, would you say, you know, at the center of the image is a self-portrait with a gun to the actual head, the side of the head. And I want to know if you think that is that the starting point of the narrative in the particular image that you have created, and or not.
Actually, yes. That was one of the catalysts for the idea of, you know, random thought. I've been looking at a lot of violent images, things like suicides, beheadings, things like that. And I've sort
going
of
back to ISIS.
Going back to the whole ISIS thing.
Yeah.
And so I've been sort of looking through the physiognomy of each person facing imminent death. And so, and there's a sort of strangeness that it's almost, you can't quite describe it, but there's a sort of oddness to the face as you go from somebody committing suicide to somebody being killed. And so almost the psychology sort of reflects on the faces. in these minute ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so the image really started from that. And all of a sudden, you have this sort of catastrophe of other images coming from that original image.
Mm-hmm. So just quickly touch on each of you. Could you quickly touch on what the experiences of working in such a small spaces? I mean, I'm aware that it's at this a size that's just has not been in the vernacular of the art vernacular here to work with. What was that for you? Was it like a big step, a challenge, and how did you deal with it? Maybe Prudence could start with that, and then Camille.
Well, I think a limitation. I think you said somewhere it is not limitation or an opportunity. I think a limitation is usually an opportunity to think differently about what you do and where you could take it.
Mm.
And I think that a limitation is often a very positive thing. I think when everything's possible and unlimited resources, I think sometimes people make something that's overblown, overblown, and perhaps not as tight and as interesting. I think sometimes, very often a limitation is good, and I think in this instance, I think so. It proved. I think it was a given, and we looked at it carefully, and I think that the space was optimized in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to several exhibitions again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think having four people seriously disadvantaged our work in that space.
Yeah. No, the show packed a punch. Camille, did you feel as though the physical parameters of the space factored into how your project came about? Just really quickly.
I thought it was a good challenge, and I think it turned out. I think it turned out well, and I do find that small room has a lot of maybe visual distractions that could probably have been muted if if we had more a lengthier time to really install and change things around. But it still worked out really well and has a good flow and a good balance.
Yeah, you guys can be one of the things, one of the comments I've heard about the show is that the variation and the variety for such a limited amount of work is really I want to thank you guys for being here and talking with us, and we're going to wrap up now, and it's been really great.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And, of course, it's going to be archived on our YouTube channel and on our website. Nice. Bye, everybody. And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.